Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. Our COVID-19 coverage continues, this time looking at how one operations professional sitting essentially at ground zero of America's public health emergency is dealing with that crisis. That person is Joe Candiano. Joe is the director of operations for Hampton Home Care Incorporated, which is headquartered in Ronkonkoma, New York. Joe, nice to meet you.
Pleasure to be here, David. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure's all mine. So let's set the stage. Why don't you tell the audience a bit about Hampton Home Care, you know, where you guys are located, the region that you're serving, the types of HME and services you're providing, the types of patients you're serving. Kind of give everybody sort of a thumbnail description of where you guys are at and what you're doing.
Sure thing. Well, we are based headquarters in Ronkonkoma. We do have four locations, one in Yonkers, which is in Westchester County, another in Farmingdale, which is in Nassau County, New York. We also have a retail store in Southampton, New York. And, you know, we primarily deal with respiratory patients, all sorts of DME, durable medical equipment, wound care. The primary patient base that we do have is on the sleep side. So we have many CPAP, BiPAP patients. We do have some ventilator patients as well. But yeah, that's the basis of the area we cover and what we do.
So let's talk a bit about your role at Hampton. You know, looking at this, you've got a lot of respiratory providers. You guys are covering a good deal of ground, you know, a good bit of New York here, and really kind of a wide swath, right? Because you guys are in the, you know, the five boroughs of New York City, but then you're also in other areas as well. What's your role at Hampton, and what are you responsible for in that sort of that scenario?
Well, as the director of operations, I really oversee just the daily operational processes and procedures, whether that be in the delivery operation. I'm in charge of inventory. I do all the purchasing for the company, and just any daily operational process and procedure is under my purview.
Got it. So everything from happening in the warehouse to deliveries out in the field to, like you were saying, back end inventory control and all that good stuff.
Correct.
So knowing that you're kind of covering operations for Hampton Home Care in sort of soup to nuts fashion, you're the man to answer this question. How did COVID-19 hit your operations? Was this something that you guys were kind of keeping an eye on as reports were coming in from China and you were preparing, or were there some surprises? How did this kind of play out?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, all signs pointed to, mid to late February is when we kind of had an outlook that this thing was going to be a serious problem. You know, we did our best as far as preparation goes in terms of, you know, our first and foremost concern was the protection of our staff. So, the knee-jerk reaction was, okay, let's make sure that our guys are taken care of, masks and gloves and sanitizer, gowns, anything that's going to prevent any contact from any patient or any piece of equipment that may have been touched by a COVID-infected patient. We wanted to make sure that the people that were doing our daily work were going to be in a position to protect themselves. So from that front, we struck relatively early, and we were able to get all the personal protective equipment in the door before those real shortages took effect. As far as some of the other stuff that happened later on, supply chain issues, that there were things that happened as a result of all this taking place as fast as it did, that were really unforeseen variables that, you know, it was really difficult for us to prepare for.
And let's talk a little bit about the supply chain issues that sort of popped out at you. Could you kind of briefly describe those?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously with, you know, we knew that this was a disease that was going to affect the respiratory system of patients. So obviously with that, us being in the oxygen world and the respiratory world, we wanted to do everything in our power to make sure that, you know, we were prepared for the influx of patients we were going to have to take on as a result of this whole thing. You know, we deal with some of the largest vendors in the oxygen concentrator world. So we have a pretty well long established working relationship with these vendors. And early on, we had a pretty solid inventory of oxygen concentrators already on hand, so we felt pretty comfortable. We were really focused on non-invasive ventilation. We knew that there was going to be multiple shortages there, so we did everything in our power to get our hands on as many ventilators as we could, which we did. And we're still in good shape there, but the supply chain issue in terms of oxygen concentrators, that became a real issue that we didn't think was going to happen as quickly as it did. So, you know, we went ahead and, you know, we ordered, you know, 500 concentrators, you know, without blinking, and, you know, an order like that would have taken us, you know, a couple of weeks to get into inventory. You know, we're still waiting on the balance of the order. You know, we maybe received 200 concentrators out of 500. You know, I'm just throwing numbers out there to just kind of give you an idea of, you know, the trucking companies and the manufacturers were really piecing together, you know, sending you 5 here, 10 there, as opposed to you getting that influx of, you know, 100 units. So we really had to, you know, be steadfast in how we were going to approach taking on new oxygen patients and things of that nature.
So it was really there's an amalgamation of factors here that are causing the supply chain. Everything from like you were saying, like trucking and warehousing to manufacturing. It's a whole. It sounds like it's multiple layers. It's not just any one kind of single thing.
Well, I'll give you an example, and this is just something, a variable that there was no way for us to account for. So, you know, on these pallet orders that we receive, if we're ordering 100 concentrators, they're obviously not coming, you know, on a UPS truck or a FedEx truck or something like that. They're coming on, you know, a flatbed that has, you know, 15 pallets on it full of machines. I mean, those trucking companies, the Yellows, the ABF Freight, all these different freight companies that the manufacturers use to transport, you know, once everything took effect and the stay at home was in place, and there was, you know, a determination on who's essential, who's not essential, what businesses are going to open, what businesses aren't. If you weren't an essential business and you had to close, but you had an order for, you know, 10,000 widgets coming into your house or coming into your, you know, your warehouse, the trucking company, that truck is still full of those 10,000 widgets, whether or not you're open or not. All that means is now that truck driver who was planning on offloading that truck full of stuff, and then going to drive to another location to pick up, you know, somebody else's order. Now everything's backed up. So now you start, okay, well, that truck now has to go return to sender. So now it just created such a lag from the manufacturer to the trucking company to us. You know, we were able to understand that the demand spiked. So, okay, there's a chance that, you know, if we ordered 50, maybe we get 30. But what we didn't anticipate was, oh, this truck is full and can't pick up the load that is required to get to you. He now has to drive back to that sender, offload that, and then drive. So it created all this huge delay in deliveries, just things that were out of our control, things were out of the manufacturer's control. And it, you know, it really delayed a significant amount of time in us getting product.
So what are some of the, you know, besides the, you know, getting the inventory to you guys, were there some other kind of key issues that cropped up because of COVID-19 that impacted your operations? You know, what were some of the key ones?
Well, you know, obviously in being in the DME world, and you know, you're dealing with your insurance companies like Medicare that pay for, you know, rental equipment. So obviously, if you're an existing patient and, you know, you had a CPAP and let's say you don't want it anymore, or you got better, you don't require it anymore, whatever the case may be, or forget about CPAP, maybe it's a wheelchair, maybe it's, you know, a hospital bed. You know, when we went ahead and now said, okay, well, now we're going into the unknown where, you know, we have to go to this patient's home and pick up the equipment that's no longer needed. Did that patient possibly have COVID? Did someone in their family have COVID? Did, you know, a home health? So now you're into this unknown where we can't afford to take any chances with anything. So now on the equipment pickups, it's not just a, okay, we pick up, we disinfect, we bag, we tag, we segregate on the truck. And then tomorrow morning, the truck backs up, the dirty stuff comes off, goes into the dirty area, the clean stuff gets loaded on. There was no more of that. You know, we had to take the question mark out of the equation and basically say, okay, all of your pickups are now going to, you know, a separate location and quarantine for 21 days before they get touched. So this equipment was picked up, you know, on this day. You know, fast forward 3 weeks, you know, we write the date on the bag, fast forward 3 weeks past that quarantine period. And now we'll go ahead and open it up and disinfect it and test it and get it back into circulation if it meets all those requirements. So the whole pickup part, you know, process, I had to segregate a completely separate warehouse that is just for pickups. So there's been, you know, very, very, very big challenges that we didn't foresee happening. You know, things that, you know, we're thinking about inventory and things like that, where we said, you know, after the fact, oh man, well now we got to do the pickups, and now we have to, you know, implement a whole other process as far as making sure that you know, we're not, you know, there's no cross contamination going on, and we're doing everything, you know, in our power, being as diligent as possible to ensure that, you know, the driver, once when he picks it up from point A, it's going to here. And then, you know, we're not touching it for 3 weeks. And then after that 3 weeks, you know, so it's created a whole other process that, you know, from a manpower standpoint, it's not necessarily something we were, you know, planning on. But we had to go ahead and make an adjustment and figure it out, which is what we did.
What about some other kind of procedures? What are some other things that you guys have started implementing in order to deal with the health emergency?
Well, I mean, obviously, I've alluded to a couple times already. You know, our bread and butter really is the sleep world, the CPAP, the BiPAP, things like that. And, you know, we have respiratory therapists, technicians on hand that, you know, actually go to the patient's homes and bring them the device and set everything up, make sure that they're, you know, that they know how to use it, all those things that go into a home visit. Now, we all had to, you know, within, you know, a couple of day time, had to basically revamp the entire delivery model. So, you know, where we were dealing with certain doctors who were, you know, understood the fact that, hey, you know what, there's going to be no more face to face with the patient. You know, where you know, if I'm delivering a PAP to, you know, Mrs. Jones, who's, you know, 75 years old, that lives alone and doesn't have the wherewithal to figure something out on her own, by all means, we're going to go to her. But anybody else that was willing and able, what we've been doing is we've been boxing up whatever equipment was prescribed by the doctor, sending it to that patient via FedEx. And upon receipt of that equipment, there'll be an instructional packet inside that package that the patient will follow, you know, certain steps. And we'll go ahead and now we're going to do what we call a telepap appointment, you know, within a 4 day lag of the patient receiving the equipment till the time we actually call them. And do, you know, like a Zoom appointment, FaceTime, whatever means of communication that the patient has the capability for, we're going ahead and utilizing what we're calling a telepap setup.
Telepap, I love it.
Yeah, so it's basically, you know, it's the same thing as telehealth. You know, it's just on the CPAP end. So we've been having great success doing it. We really haven't skipped a beat in terms of getting patients set up, you know, in a timely manner from the time that, you know, the doctor request comes over. And, you know, we've also had to, you know, certain employees that, you know, were in the office, we've, you know, we have a weekly meeting where we basically, meet with the entire management group, and we want to reallocate employees. So we were able to put our staff in their homes relatively quickly with no hiccups, and their extensions are you know, at their kitchen table, and you know, we thankfully, you know, Hampton embraces technology, so a lot of these employees all have laptops that they could very easily just, you know, fold up and set it up on their kitchen table and work remotely. So that's obviously one of the things that we've had to change. And again, just like with the telepap appointments, we've been having great success with some of these employees working from home and from a production standpoint, still having them be as productive as possible.
Before I go deeper into that telepap thing, because I do want to follow up with that, but I'm curious, in an earlier conversation, you were mentioning that you're also seeing institutional health care, like hospitals, show some interest in PAP therapy because they're using it as a supplement for treating COVID-19 patients. I was wondering if you could kind of go into that a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, it was you know, from some of these healthcare professionals that are much smarter than I am, it was deemed that they were able to provide some type of therapy like an NIV, like a non-invasive ventilation, with, you know, with the higher end BiPAPs, the STs and the AVAPs, things like that, and they were able to work with those particular devices and almost serve as some sort of NIV, and they were getting some results from that. So that was something we were in a position to help with. We also had some older antiquated ventilators, the Puritan Bennett LP10s and some Achievas and things of that nature that, you know, that were completely outdated, but, you know, also completely functional, that we were able to be in a position to help out some of the local hospitals in donating them and making sure that they were going to be able to go to somebody that was in, you know, as opposed to sitting upstairs in a closet that was collecting dust because they were old units. Now they were, you know, going into a critical care unit and helping prolong somebody's life.
Well, and good on you guys for donating them. So I'm curious, are there other notable ways that the health emergency has impacted you guys, or is that mainly altering your pickups and your deliveries and those sorts of things?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, strictly from a day-to-day operational standpoint, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of these things that have taken place, some of these changes that, you know, if there's a vaccine, you know, thrown out there tomorrow and this thing is dead by next week, you know, a lot of these changes, we're more than likely going to continue just because of the success rate that we've been having. Now, listen, you throw something like changing your whole delivery and pickup operation to now you're dropping pickups off at a separate location and doing things like that. That's something that once we're okay and once the once we get back to normal, you know, we'll resume business as usual in that respect. But you know, we've had to, you know, something like, you know, pickups that have been, you know, you don't know where they were before you. That was something that was super important, and just for the safety of everybody. And, you know, in the warehouse, you know, you have dirty equipment on one side, you have clean on the other side. This thing is an airborne virus. You know, you don't want, you know, something to get blown from one piece of equipment, hit over to, you know, something that's brand new in a box. And you know, in that respect, it's better to be safe than sorry. But yeah, for the most part, those real challenges were the pickups, like, you know, like I said, and the delivery model when we first, you know, implemented it, we really didn't know how it was going to be received. So, the fact that we've had as much success with that as we've had, that was super, super reassuring that, you know, we know that this is going to be a means to get this done after this thing's all said and finished.
But, this has to have been a challenge. I'm sure your guys are, you know, your delivery guys and everybody else are probably making crazy sacrifices right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to that point, David, I mean, you know, these guys, and this is one of the good things that you pray that after this is all over, we'll come out of it. You know, these guys are first responders. You know, I don't care what anybody says. You know, not being an EMT or an emergency, you know, whatever the case may be, these guys are providing life sustaining equipment to sick people in their home, without regard of diagnosis of whether it's, you know, something that is infectious or transmissible. It doesn't matter. Now, they'll take precautions to protect themselves, as they should. But, you know, from any normal year besides 2020, this is what these guys do. There's no questions asked. They go into the home. They spend as much time as necessary with the patient and or the family to ensure that they know what's going on before they leave, because it is life sustaining. And even more so now, the sacrifices that are being made just by my staff alone, and this is true, I know, with DMEs across the country. You know, I still have plenty of counterparts and friends that work for other DME companies, and you know, regardless of company, you know, these delivery technicians are a rare breed, in a sense that they know the risk, they recognize the risk. You know, I have somebody that I know that, you know, sent his wife and his kids to Canada with some family for 6 weeks when this thing first hit, because he's a frontline guy, because he's going into these patients' homes and he doesn't want to take the chance to possibly pass something off to his family.
Man.
And, you know, without skipping a beat, you know, it wasn't something, hey, Joe, just so you know, I'm doing this. This was in a passing conversation. Hey, you know what? It's rough out there and I don't want to take the chance, so I'm sending them, you know, to Canada until this thing blows over. And that's the ultimate sacrifice.
That, right.
You know, I'm losing on precious time with my my infant kid. And at a time where my wife needs me the most, you know, I'm shipping them off for their safety. You know, and then you talk about, if you want to be depressed, you know, you're working it all day and then you come home, you put on the news, and it's just, it's this constant, you know, doom and gloom. And these guys still, without hesitation, without complaining, they just put their boots on every day and they just get it done because they realize how essential they are.
So I'm curious, are your you know, your referrals and your partners and the other people that you're working with in the healthcare continuum, are they recognizing that? Are they seeing that happening?
Yeah, well, listen, the people that we work with on a daily basis, they know what we are. They know how important the HME industry is to the health and safety of their patients. Those aren't the people that we need to get on board. You know, the ones, you know, if you brought, you know, any normal citizen into a patient's home that is on, you know, that's one, you know, a Hampton patient or any other patient for that matter. And you say, hey, where do you think the patient received this equipment from? 9 people out of 10 will tell you, oh, I'm sure the hospital gave it to them. They don't know that the HME industry exists. So my hope is that, you know, once this thing, you know, is said and done, and my wife is a nurse and I understand how crucial they are. You know, these guys and the people that are on the front lines, respiratory therapists, I mean, these people need to be in that same category, because the risk is equal for them as it is for nurses and doctors and therapists and everything else. So that really, you know, the message doesn't need to get cascaded to our existing people that we deal with. It needs to get cascaded to everybody else.
Going forward, if you're thinking about, DME after COVID-19, what are some of the kind of key things that you think will be kind of permanent changes for this industry? Like, for instance, I think everybody and the industry would agree that telehealth is going to be an increasing reality here. And, you know, if we can, you know, do things like face-to-faces over the phone or over Zoom or whatever, when it comes to prior authorization, that kind of stuff, I'm sure a lot of people would much rather do that. what do you think are going to be some of the kind of the changes to come out of this, the positive changes or the negative changes?
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, what you alluded to in the telepath, the telehealth appointments, I think is going to be more of the standard as opposed to the exception. I think the delivery, you know, the delivery model on the DME side, as we described the telepath appointments with CPAP and BiPAP, you know, it's similar on the DME side. So, I mean, obviously, if we're going to set up a hospital bed, we're not leaving that at the patient's doorstep. We'll make it very clear to whoever's in the home that, hey, the driver's going to be there with a hospital bed. When he gets there, you know, we would like the room clear. We would like the room clear of people as well. The driver's going to do what he has to do. He's going to, you know, take a picture to ensure that everything's set up properly. And then as soon as he leaves, he's going to give you guys a call. And he's going to go through the step-by-step instructions on how to operate that bed, how to maintain that bed, and do all these things via FaceTime from sitting in his truck, you know, minus the patient contact, but still being able to accomplish, you know, the same task. So I think that is going to be moving to more of the standard. I think that just like even after COVID-19 has subsided, things like, you know, I think you're going to see people that are a lot less apt to, you know, put out their hand to shake your hand, things like that. I think it's going to serve the same. I think it's going to be the same thing as, okay, ma'am, you received your delivery. Please sign here. I think people are going to be a little more hesitant to reach for that driver's pen or vice versa. So I think we're shifting more towards a virtual sort of setup where there's limited physical contact, physical transmission, however you want to word it, and it's going to be more shifted towards taking a picture or just something virtual in that respect. I also think that, you know, what we've realized is that, you know, maybe having certain employees who are capable work from home. They have the capability to work from home. They don't require any resources that we can't provide them at home. So I think you're going to start to see more remote employees that maybe stay that way as opposed to coming back into the office because it's not necessary.
It's interesting how the public health emergency has kind of forced these sort of, almost like cultural changes, on everybody, and they're kind of adopting them without skipping a beat. It's just purely out of necessity. It's really interesting. So, Joe, I'm curious, as we're kind of wrapping this conversation up, what kind of advice would you offer your fellow providers when it comes to this situation? You know, what if you had any kind of parting bits of advice to them, what would it be?
Listen, I think the whole shift as a result of this, we all need to do better in terms of being extra diligent in protecting the people who work for us. And I think it's our job to really let people know that the delivery technician, you know, the warehouse staff, you know, these people that are on the front lines, they need support. They need, and they've been unsung heroes for a long time, but I think there comes a point, excuse me, where it's time to say, you know what, these guys deserve some credit. They need to realize how integral they are to the operation. I also think from an infection control standpoint, and this may be something that, needs to be taken seriously by people across the board, but more importantly with us, I think, you know, the extra diligence in cleaning, in keeping drivers safe, in ensuring that they have the things that they need to protect themselves and prevent the cross contamination. Because if you have a careless driver out there, it's very easy to be part of the uh, of the of the problem as opposed to be part of the solution. So you have to make sure that, you know, your driver is prepared and has, you know, his hand sanitizer. And if he's doing a pickup, he's gowned up and he's disposing of those things. You know, I think the constant re-education on infection control and the spot checking by managers to ensure that it's being implemented on a daily basis, because it's very easy to get careless. I mean, you go to the store today, you know, I'm already seeing people become more careless based on, you know, the weather's getting a little bit nicer and numbers are starting to drop a little bit. You know, if people start getting lax when it comes to protecting themselves and others, this thing's going to come back roaring with a really ugly head. So I really think it's important for providers such as Hampton and other ones out there to make sure that they're doing everything possible to prevent the spread and you know, train their staff and make sure that the delivery people and everybody who has any type of patient contact are doing everything they need to do to ensure that the spread is being contained.
Well, Joe, thanks very much. You've provided a ton of insight and advice. I really appreciate you taking the time.
It was my pleasure, David. Anytime.
Thanks again to Joe for all the information that he shared. This is great stuff. If you want to see more COVID-19 coverage, head on over to hme-business.com. And at the top, you'll see Trending Now, and you can click on COVID-19, and you'll see all our coverage, whether it's news coverage, features, podcast episodes, whatever. It's all there in one spot. Before I sign off, don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, including COVID-19, make sure to go over to, once again, that's hme-business.com, and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. And if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to hit me up. You can reach me again on Twitter at Post Acute News, or you can reach me by email, and that's DKO, P as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening. The HME industry has gone through a lot, so I'm convinced we'll get through COVID-19. In the meantime, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.